Hello and hello, hello, and welcome to the Roundup on Geeks of Doom. This is the mini podcast where we talk a little bit about music, movies, and what's going on our respective podcasts, Social Blend and The Drill Down, and what's also going on down on Geeks of Doom itself. My name is Andy Sarcini. I'm also known as Mr. Baby Man amongst my social media circles, and I'm here with Greg Davies, who is known as CGT2099 amongst his social media circles. How you doing, Greg?
I'm doing very good, Andy, and dilly gaff to you, Mr. Sassini. And should I also say happy Father's Day to you and all our fathers listening to this edition of the Roundup this week?
Yep, we're recording this on Father's Day evening. So happy Father's Day. Hope everybody had a great Father's Day, and hopefully it continues on through the evening.
You know, I got to say, I need to get more information of this from Silent J74, my co-host on Social Blend, but he posted some pictures on Facebook today, which looked like suspiciously like his Father's Day gift. Oh. And they were things like Pringles chips and, you know, candy and drinks and stuff like that, but they'd all been relabeled by his daughter as Star Wars products. So, like, the chips were R2-D2 chips and stuff like that. So it looked really neat. I'll have to find out from him what that was all about.
I actually got a very nice Father's Day gift, something I'd been had my eye on for quite a while. I got one of those Keurig coffee makers, you know, the kind that take the little little coffee pods. You pop the pods in, and the hot water flows through them, and you brew like one cup of, at a time of whatever kind of coffee you want.
Mm. See, I don't need that. I go through like buckets of coffee at a time. So,
but it's the same coffee, isn't it? It's the same, like the same variety of coffee.
No,
or do you have
no,
different varieties.
I go the traditional route.
Ah,
so yes, but it's actually coffee is an interesting thing that's different between Australia and America. Like America, there's a big focus on brewing coffee, like having devices of some kind.
Uh huh. It's true.
whereas in Australia, like there is that. There, I mean, percolation is popular, and cappuccinos are popular, and so on and so forth. But the vast majority of people drink instant coffee in Australia.
Really?
Yeah, it's really interesting.
What?
So,
how can you do that to yourself? Oh my goodness!
I don't know. It's interesting because when I went back and visited, I took back to it again like a duck to water.
Oh,
it was really interesting. I guess it's like a cultural thing that kind of become adjusted to, kind of like Vegemite. You know, a lot of Americans that I meet over here can't handle Vegemite, but I can eat it every day, you know. So I guess that's a cultural thing. But anyway, it must have been inevitable that I was going to pick this trailer this week.
Yeah, it's so funny. When I saw your link, I'm like, how is it possible that he found, out of all the movies that are coming out of all the trailers, that you happen to find the one trailer that is heavy metal themed?
Well, this is, let me make it clear, not only is this looking very cool, it's also your antidote to Rock of Ages. If you
yes.
feel as much as I do about Rock of Ages, which is very negatively,
I'm
powerfully negative about it.
I'm right there with you, mate.
You know, now, bear in mind, I will make this clear. I was speaking about this with a friend of mine the other day. I think I'm not going to go see the movie, but from what I've seen of Tom Cruise, he pulls off the role fairly well. And I don't want to begrudge Cruise because I think he's actually a very good actor, and I think he has the ability to play damn near anything very well. But my issue that I take with the whole thing is that it's just so Glee-ified. And tacky and candy laced, and it's disgusting.
Yeah.
It's hair metal with a big dose of fructose corn syrup, and I can't handle it. But this is the raw metal I'm about to bring to you. Our very good friend, all the way from the UK, Obi Dan, put this post up at geeksofdoom.com the other day, and it's a documentary coming out called A History of Time to Come. and it's focusing on not just heavy metal in general, but a specific subgenre of heavy metal, which is thrash. Thrash metal in general, and which has always been very popular since the 1980s. But the interesting thing that happened for the UK is that there was a period of time in the history of UK metal where thrash was notoriously, or seemed to be notoriously, absent from the metal scene. The thrash bands that seemed to be continuing to be extremely popular were mostly American, and you had the odd few come out, like Sepultura from Brazil, but there wasn't a lot of stuff coming out from the UK. But now there is. There's some bands like Evile and Lawnmower Death, and some really interesting stuff that's been coming out from the UK over the last decade or so. And this documentary focuses on that and the development of how UK bands develop their own unique thrash scene.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a microcosmic documentary in the sense that it focuses in on one little area and one group of bands making a significant movement in the metal scene. But the film, directed by Joshua Callismith, looks really good, and it's I'm not sure whether we're going to get a theatrical release over here, but I would really hope that we would get to see it on Netflix streaming at some stage. And so anyway, here's a very short trailer on a history of time to come, and you get to hear not only from some of the bands, but also a segment and a taste of some of their music. So check it out.
It's the weird unspoken thing just rose up. Just bands doing the same thing. It's fantastic.
There's other guys wearing skinny jeans and growing their hair long and looking uncomfortable as well.
It still came back into this scene thing, and I think the venues had a lot to do with that. And he organised two, what they call Summer Hoedown gigs. And they seem to have got this legendary tag to them now. They just pulled everybody in.
As to why the whole scene collapsed, it's a hard thing to think on and back on it now, really, when there were a lot of success as well.
Do those British bands get enough exposure that we would have required to be able to compete with regards to record sales?
The big gap in the kind of mid to late 90s didn't happen because the bands collapsed. It wasn't. The scene didn't stop because there were no bands. The bands stopped because there was no scene. If this documentary explains what happened to metal in that period, I'd be interested to know the answer.
So there you go. There's just a snippet of A History of Time to Come, and it grabbed my attention this week, so I'm going to keep my eyes peeled for it, and I'm sure a few of the metalheads out there that peruse geeksofdoom.com regularly are interested in this as well, so keep your eyes peeled for it, and if anyone associated with the documentary out there has any news about it, we'd love to hear about it, so you can get in contact with us at Geeks of Doom as well. We'd love to hear more about what's going on. Apparently there's a book that's going to be coming out with this as well.
What's the name of the book?
It's called One Foot in the Gravy. So there you go. But that's your dose of metal for this episode of the Geeks of Doom Roundup. And we're going to take a little bit of a step in a different direction for your music segment of this episode.
Yes, we are. And there's a reason why, though. I'm not just a fan of syrupy early 70s rock ballads. As we often do on the show, we like to honor the recently departed in rock. And one of the recently departed within the last couple of weeks is Bob Welch.
Oh, yes.
Yes, Bob Welch, who is the guitarist for Fleetwood Mac, but he was actually a guitarist for an iteration of Fleetwood Mac that came before the version of Fleetwood Mac that probably gave the band its most popularity, the Lindsey Buckingham, Stevie Nicks era. So Bob Welch was the guitarist for Fleetwood Mac before Buckingham Nicks came on board.
Very instrumental for not only the early days of the band, I might add, but also in terms of forming the direction that they would eventually go in.
That's right.
When Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham came on board. His role in the band is highly underrated.
Mm-hmm. He passed away recently of an apparent suicide, which is a tragic, tragic situation at 66 years old.
Yeah, he apparently, you might have some info in front of you there, I'm not sure, but apparently he was diagnosed with some debilitating disorder or something like that. And because he had, his father had a similar condition and he had to care for him all the time, he didn't want to put his family through that.
Oh.
So that's why he chose to commit suicide. At least that's what I was reading about several weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm looking at Stoogiepedia's post on this on Geeks of Doom. And according to his reportage, he was suffering from, quote, undisclosed health issues. So we're not entirely sure. But apparently his dad was a movie producer and screenwriter who worked with Bob Hope and Bing Crosby. And his mom was a singer and actress who appeared in various films throughout the mid-20th century. So, yeah, he joined Fleetwood Mac and left just before or around the time that Buckingham Nicks came on board. And later he had a few solo albums of his own, and he had a top 10 hit on his standout solo album called French Kiss. And the song was called Sentimental Lady. And it's one of those songs that if you heard it, you would know it immediately. In fact, let me play just a little snippet of his solo version of Sentimental Lady before we get into the song here. Hang on here. This is one of those... I mean, a lot of the younger listeners here may not recognize it, but old fogies like you and I know this. You are here and warm, but I could look away and you'd be gone. So, but what I wanted to play for this week's episode was the original version of the song that he recorded with Fleetwood Mac, which appeared on their Bare Trees album. And I don't know exactly when that was, but it was definitely before the Buckingham Nicks era. And it's a slightly different take. It's a slightly less polished version, a little bit more acoustic. It's a really nice version. So I'll play a couple minutes of this, and then maybe we can talk about it a little bit more afterwards. But here is... Bob Welch's original version of Sentimental Lady off of the Fleetwood Mac album Bare Trees. You are here and warm, but I could look away and you'd be gone. 'Cause we live in a time
why I've traveled far, 'cause I come so together where you
rushing by. If I had weather with you, 14 joys and a will to be merry. All of the things I can say are buried. Sing in the temple, gentle wind blowing through our life again. Sing.
So that was just a couple minutes there of Sentimental Lady from Fleetwood Mac off of their Bare Trees album. And that album was released in 1972. I did a little research while we were playing that. One of the sad things about that, about Bob Welch's contribution to the band, was that when Fleetwood Mac was inducted into the Hall of Fame... Bob Welch was not included in that induction.
That's not just sad, that's an abomination.
Yes. Even though other members of Fleetwood Mac who had predated Bob Welch and had left the band before Bob Welch even were included in that induction, he wasn't. So a real shame that he wasn't. So, you know, whatever little honor we can do to his memory here on the Roundup.
He was, he was very publicly bitter about that for quite a number of years. And, rightfully so, I think. You know, even though, I think the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a trashy organization anyway to begin with. But, it's just a, like you said, it's a shame. And I hope, he gets some rest now that... he has passed on, and I know that the fans of Fleetwood Mac and 70s rock in general will be remembering him through his music for years to come.
Yes, yes. All right, so RIP Bob Welch, rest in peace. We loved you. We loved your contribution to Fleetwood Mac and Sentimental Lady and the other hit that he had, Ebony Eyes. That's a good one, too. That's another one of those songs that, if you're about my age or about Greg's age, you would know it when you heard it. So there you go.
I don't know about you, mate, but I'm a young sprite. I don't remember that stuff. But what I do remember is District 9, and you've got an update for us on Neil Blomkamp's sequel.
Yes. So Neil Blomkamp was the director of District 9, plucked from the scores of indie directors, hand protégéd by Peter Jackson to I'm just making up words left and right. I don't even know if that's a word. hand protégéd. Anyway, Peter Jackson chose to support Neil Blomkamp's vision. After seeing his short, I can't remember, what was the name of the short that inspired District 9? Something about Johannesburg. Alone in Johannesburg, I think it was called.
Well, sure, I thought it was actually called District 9 as well, but, obviously I was wrong. But anyway.
So he supported his vision to and produced District 9. District 9 was in, when was District 9? It was a few years ago. It was 2009, maybe?
Yeah, thereabouts. Mm-hmm.
And we haven't heard anything from Neil Blomkamp up until recently. He's had a project in the works, Elysium, and we didn't know anything about it. Well, according to, I can't even pronounce this Geeks of Doom columnist's name, Ilyaj Jack Kim. I have a feeling
it's the name Mike Jaley written backwards.
Aha! I knew it was something like that. So, according to Mike Jaley backwards, Ilyaj Jack Kim, Neil Blomkamp's follow-up to District 9 Elysium has a new update to the synopsis, so we now finally know what it's about. I'm going to read this to you. In the year 2159, two classes of people exist. The very wealthy who live on a pristine man-made space station called Elysium, and the rest who live in an overpopulated, ruined Earth. Secretary Rhodes, played by Jodie Foster, a hardline government official, will stop at nothing to enforce the anti-immigration laws and preserve the luxurious lifestyle of the citizens of Elysium. That doesn't stop the people of Earth from trying to get in by any means they can. When unlucky Max is backed into a corner, he agrees to take on a daunting mission that, if successful, will not only save his life, but could bring equality to these polarized worlds. You know what this sounds to me? I'm going to tell you, it sounds like a cross between two different movies. It sounds like a cross between Blade Runner and Gattaca.
I will admit that there is some parallels between there, but what the synopsis does for me is that it sounds more in line with some of the classic science fiction novels and novellas of the mid-20th century mm-hmm. and onwards. There's a lot about this that reminds me of Asimov, for example. There's a lot of... it feels like a synopsis for a book.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it feels like a classic sci-fi book. And really, in a lot of ways, District 9 had that kind of feeling to it
right.
as well. And so I think what we're seeing here is not only Blomkamp's originality with the concept of District 9 continuing into this particular new story, but also his ultimate respect for classic science fiction.
Yep. Yeah. Now, what I like about this synopsis is it feels like what science fiction does best, uses the genre to tell stories of our own humanity. Just like District 9 was obviously not about aliens, it was really about the segregation of races, human races. So is Elysium sounds like it's basically tackling the issue of class warfare, but doing it in a way that is couched within the genre of science fiction. So it sounds wonderful. It's something I'm looking forward to. So
well, I'm interested in how he's going to tie in the concepts of that was left open at the end of District 9 with this one, because I mean, nothing in that synopsis indicates anything to do with Charlton Copley, but an official photo came out earlier in the year mm-hmm. showing him in a spacesuit. So he comes back into the story somehow, and obviously he's back in human
but
form.
But it's not a sequel.
It's going to be interesting to find out how that fits in with this tale involving Jodie Foster and Matt Damon.
Yeah, I don't believe it's a sequel. I think it's just Charlton Copley is starring in it, is one of the stars. Charlton Copley... Oh. Jodie Foster, Matt Damon, William Fichtner, Sonia Braga, and Diego Luna.
Now, I was on the understanding that it was the sequel to District 9.
Not a sequel. His follow-up, meaning that it's the next movie that he's directing, but I don't think it has any story connection to District 9, as far as I know.
I remember reading somewhere about maybe it's set in the same universe.
Could be.
Or something. And Copley's role in this one is of a descendant. Kind of similar to what they did with Lance Henriksen in the Alien series, maybe.
Oh, right.
I don't know.
Or even Sigourney Weaver in Alien 4, where it's her clone. Boy, that was a cop-out, wasn't it?
You know what? Have you gone back and watched that film since
I watched
it came
the
out?
First Alien just before seeing Prometheus, but I haven't watched the other ones recently.
Okay, I would highly recommend going back and having a look at it, because Alien Resurrection was written by none only than Joss Whedon.
Yeah, I know.
And
I know.
If you actually go back and look at a lot of the elements of the story, you'll be absolutely shocked and surprised to see that many of the characters he introduces tend to be prototypes for who we end up seeing in the Firefly series.
Interesting.
And it's having that kind of knowledge now, going back and watching it, it's actually a lot more of an enjoyable experience. And I found myself focusing on the extra characters more than what I was Sigourney or whatever. So, you know, it added a different dimension. It's completely changed the viewing experience for me. So it's worth checking out, worth revisiting anyway, at any rate, in my mind.
While we're
on the topic of Joss Whedon.
Oh, yeah.
This is a bit of a segue.
Oh, yeah, that is a good segue.
I finally saw The Avengers yesterday.
Yes, and what'd you think?
I loved it. Wasn't it terrific? Hell of a film. I felt a little disjointed in the beginning of the story, though. It's I think the way it kind of kicked off was different somehow from what I was expecting. So I felt a little, I guess you could say, disoriented, I guess.
It's not a perfect film. And some of the criticism that I've heard about The Avengers has to do with the beginning of the movie. Like, it takes a while to really kick into the story, and it doesn't do it in a very smooth way.
Yeah, but what I did enjoy about it was that one of the things you often find in movies where there's a team of some kind, particularly in the movie the story that initializes them as a team, is a moment where the team realizes they have to get together to fight X bad guy, because the only way they can defeat X bad guy is by pulling their resources. And that never was brought up in The Avengers. Joss Whedon really kind of forced them together in a lot of ways. And I think...
If you really think about it, the enemy in The Avengers was themselves.
Yeah, in a lot of ways it was. You know, and there was also that element of the Hulk as well, like being the uncertain factor as well. I thought... Now, I'm a bit biased because I love The Incredible Hulk, and I love the way the Hulk looked in the movie. But this version of the Hulk gave a lot more personality, I thought. And I really loved the way they kind of held on to, Banner's secrets and control over the Hulk. To certain pivotal moments. It was really remarkable storytelling that we inspire, I thought. I really enjoyed it. I don't think it lived up to my expectations, but it went pretty damn close. So,
yes.
Anyway, what I wanted to talk about was a story that grabbed my attention this week by Badass. As Geeks of Doom. There's rumors floating around that Whedon might be putting together a... up to half an hour of deleted scenes into a director's cut of The Avengers on the Blu-ray edition. And so the rumor at the moment is that Marvel Studios is looking at the profit that they're making from The Avengers and going, you know what, we could copy Avatar and do a re-release in the theaters before we put it out on DVD and Blu-ray. That's looking like that's the way it's going to go. Anyway, that's my story of the week. And Andy, what's going on with the
Drill Down? Well, the Drill Down, last week's episode, we talked about the announcements from Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference that they held in San Francisco a couple weeks ago. We talked about the new MacBook Pros and the new, especially the new MacBook Pro with the next generation Retina display, the $2,200 one. Also the new updates to iOS 6 and Mountain Lion that they announced at the WWDC. And we also talked about policing copyright infringement, where we discussed a story involving the Oatmeal, Matthew Inman, who creates the Oatmeal comic, web comic, and how he was being sued by the lawyers representing funnyjunk.com because he had slandered them for hosting his intellectual property on their site without attribution. And so he basically besmirch their name, and they wanted money in return for that. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to ask the internet for money, and then I'm going to in your name, and then I'm going to distribute it to charity. You know, I'm going to ask for the internet for money, the money that you're asking me for, and then I'm going to distribute to charity. They asked him for $20,000. He raised well over $100,000 to distribute to two charities. And he got to basically make them look bad in the process. So we also talked about another password breach on Last.fm, Twitter airing their first ever TV ad, and ICANN, which is the U.S. company that is responsible for assigning new domains, opening up their basically they're opening up these top level domains that involve a lot of new top level domains, and allowing for a cash grab of the internet. Next week's episode, we're going to be talking about a document leak that shows that Microsoft, speaking of Microsoft, who purchased Skype, which is going kind of hinky on us this week. Microsoft is planning an Xbox 720. And so this document leak reveals a lot of the details involved in that new upcoming Xbox. So we'll be talking about that. Plus a couple of other things, like Microsoft's planning on releasing a new tablet device on Monday, which we're recording on Sunday, so we won't know about it until Monday, but we'll definitely know by Wednesday when we record the Drill Down. And the Drill Down records live on Geeks of Doom on Wednesday evenings, and then the following Friday is the MP3 release, also on Geeks of Doom. You can find all of that on geeksofdoom.com. Just go to the right-hand sidebar, and up at the very top, you can subscribe to the Drill Down from one of those buttons there. So how about yourself, Greg? What can we expect to see this week on Social Blend?
Well, dear listeners, let me tell you real quick that if you caught some of the gaffes that we're experiencing on this particular recording, it's because we're experiencing some issues with Skype while recording. And on the previous episode of Social Blend, we did talk about Skype and the fact that they're going to be some embedding advertising during user calls, which we were quite offended by.
That's terrible.
Oh, it's an awful idea. And so, you know, we explored some of the direction that Microsoft seems to be taking with Skype, and I guess we'll see how things pan out from there. But overall, our feature on the last edition of Social Blend was that we had Jeremy Rosen from Roadrunner Records on the show with us, and we got to preview an exclusive song from the new release from Rush.
Oh, wow.
From their album Clockwork Angels. We got to play the new song Headlong Flight on the show. We also got to preview a song from Gojira as well. And among that, we talked about a whole bunch of other things, including the Oatmeal versus Funny Junk story.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be continuing focusing on that in coming episodes because, well, it's an ongoing drama. And it seems to be that the lawyer representing Funny Junk is the one causing most of the drama, but we'll talk about that on later shows. This week on Social Blend, we're doing our music edition of Social Blend called Crania Melody, and this week we're going with the theme of live songs. So we've got a selection of songs recorded live in concert, and we've selected them for very specific reasons. You know, something that, you know, we feel were very special performances by certain bands,
uh-huh,
or unique and obscure performances by some bands. For example, one of the tunes that's going to be on the show is a duet between Tori Amos and Maynard James Keenan from Tool.
Oh.
So that's really interesting. So we've got the music edition of Social Blend coming up this week. Crania Melody Alive will be recording that Wednesday night, and it will be ready for you guys Thursday morning to download onto your devices or a little stream, or check it out on the website, or get it from iTunes, or have a look at it on our subreddit. Wherever you get your access to Social Blend, you'll be able to check it out this Thursday morning. And when can people catch the drill down, Andy?
For Wednesday evenings live on Geeks of Doom, and then the following Friday recorded on MP3, also on Geeks of Doom.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I think what we might do is wrap this up before we get hit by more technical difficulties thanks to Microsoft and Skype.
Ironically enough, now we're sounding crystal clear just as we're finishing the show.
Don't jinx us. Don't jinx us. You know, maybe we're being monitored by, Microsoft, and there might be some dude going, he just said that, I'm going to mess with him now. Yeah, Skype. What a Microsoft douchebags. What can I say? Anyway.
Better quit while we're ahead.
I think so. We will catch you next time for another edition of the Geeks of Doom Roundup right here at geeksofdoom.com. Dilly-gaff. Dilly-gaff.